You're going to love this. Just love it.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
I never do.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It never is.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
I never am scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
I'll just fall.
Clowns to the left.
Yeah, you do that.
Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio's KPFK in Los Angeles, this is your broadcast, as heard on 90.7 FM in LA. 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Oregon Central Coast. 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And other fine affiliates on terrestrial airwaves in parts unknown. Also coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. On iTunes, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel. On Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, and Radio Sputnik. 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, says me, if not the Kentucky Democratic Party this week for some odd reason. I don't get it. I don't know. Why don't they like me? What did I do to them?
Why? What happened?
I don't know. I'm just trying to help. We'll get to that in a minute. Hey, Desi Doyen,
hey.
Is our producer, Desi Doyen. You will, of course, be joining us a little bit later for our latest green news report with, as ever, some big news. You know, we are like the only ones, I think, that I know of who actually cover environmental news constantly, consistently on the radio, stories that are breaking, stories that matter in regard to climate change, you know, unless it's a science show, unless it's one of those ghettoized, stick them on the weekends, of NPR yawner programs. We cover green news all the time because it's always important.
Yes, it's about everything. So
It is. It, and it should be right at the center of our politics. In any event, because it's when people don't cover it, it allows people like Charles Koch to go onto MSNBC. Yes, Charles Koch of the Koch brothers, and claim that the Koch brothers are environmentally responsible. They take care of the environment, and it allows MSNBC to not say anything in response, to not point out their years.
They're egregious.
Egregious.
Environmental yeah. violations yeah. and, you know, and just basic law breaking.
Well, so we'll talk about that in some of the 6 ghettoized minutes of the Green News Report that we'll run for you later on. As well, there is now new legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate to stop all fossil fuel extraction on public federal lands. More bad news for Volkswagen and, oh, fun with TransCanada and the Keystone XL pipeline.
Yes, it's just a party for everybody.
I knew this was coming. All right, we'll get to all of that in a little bit. Also, speaking of science, we will be joined by David Roberts of Vox.com shortly concerning what he, you know, we're just coming out of these, it was a week or two ago, these Benghazi hearings and this embarrassing, ridiculous Benghazi Select Committee that the Republicans in the U.S. House are running, or at least were running. Haven't heard much from them lately. Not since Hillary showed up, testified for about 11 hours, kind of cleaned their clock. And, well, Republicans are really embarrassed about it by
now,
it
seems. Took the air out of their tires.
Just a bit. But David Roberts argues that the Benghazi Select Committee is not the worst Republican-led committee in the U.S. House. There is, as Yoda might say, there is another. And we will be talking about that other committee, that other horrible, horrible committee in the U.S. House coming up shortly with David Roberts. We spent the bulk of yesterday's program talking about what went on on Election Day in Kentucky. and specifically the case of Jack Conway, the Democratic Attorney General, who was running to replace the very popular Democratic two-term Democratic governor in Kentucky, Steve Beshear. Jack Conway was leading in all of the pre-election polls by anywhere from 3 to 5 points. And then for some reason, he ended up losing on election day, if you believe the results reported by the completely 100% unverified computers that tallied the mostly paper ballots in Kentucky, the bluegrass state. I think it's the bluegrass state, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. If you believe those results, not only did the Republican Tea Party candidate, who was not a very good candidate, not only did he win, beat Jack Conway despite the pre-election polls, he destroyed Jack Conway by some 9 points. That's like a 13 or 15 point swing in the polls, depending on how you look at it, from the pre-election polls right up to Election Day to what happened after Election Day. And of course, the argument that we made yesterday was, well, those election results could be perfectly accurate. They could be exactly on the money. Never mind that the same computers, that optical scan computers that scan the paper ballots, have failed all over the country in election after election, are easily gamed, easily hacked, often, you know, count ballots incorrectly. Never mind that. They could be, in this case, absolutely right. But the fact is, nobody in Kentucky, nobody in the country has any idea if they are right or wrong, because they don't bother to hand count those paper ballots to find out, which I think is crazy, especially when you have such a swing from the pre-election polls to the results as announced by the computers on Election Day and unverified by any human being. Adding to that, Carole Coons from Crooks and Liars was on with us yesterday, pointing out that the Democrats who won in the down ballot races, for example, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, race, which was actually the son of the very popular current Democratic governor, they both won. Not only did they win, but they won and received tens of thousands of more votes than the Democrat at the top of the ticket, than Jack Conway. And that's something that, well, that could happen if Jack Conway was involved in a scandal or he had said something stupid right before the election. None of that happened. So how do we explain these results? I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know if they actually are the results, because nobody actually bothered to verify them, as we spent quite a bit of time yesterday discussing. Well, I've been trying to get some comment from some folks in Kentucky, from some of the Democrats there. I have not yet gotten a call back from Jack Conway's campaign. I put in that call yesterday, you know, to find out if they are concerned about the reported results not matching up with the pre-election polls. I can't get a lot of comment. I called the Kentucky Democratic Party today. The person who answered the phone said that there was nobody there to comment. We're all gone until Monday, she told me. Really? Call us on Monday. And I said to whoever this person was, well, are you concerned, by the way? Is there any concern there at the party about the polls, about the results and you know, that they don't seem to match with the pre-election polls, and the down ballot races got a lot more votes for Democrats, which really is as Bev Harris from Black Box Voting told us, a significant anomaly that raises a red flag. She told me, not a yellow flag, a red flag. Okay. And I said, are you concerned about the accuracy of the results? This person I talked to at the Kentucky Democratic Party who answered the phone said, oh, they're accurate. It happened. It's what you saw. Democrats lost. They only won two races. I said, well, okay, how do you know that? Are you concerned that nobody has actually counted any of those ballots? She said to me, well, you know what? Let me give you the phone to Charlotte here. And she passed the phone to Charlotte. And then I asked the same question of Charlotte, who said, I'm going to give you the number of the communications director, which is David Bergstein. So I got the communications director. I was able to call him, got him on the phone. He answered the phone. That's great. I said, do you have any plans to verify the results in any way? Do you have any concerns about them? He seemed to have no idea what I was talking about. He said, I'll point you to the statement on the party's website. I said, is this the statement that was released on election night? He said, yes, that's the one. And that statement is, it's two paragraphs. It says, tonight's results are disappointing, but Jack Conway ran a strong and passionate campaign dedicated to moving Kentucky forward. Jack Conway has achieved a tremendous record of accomplishment as our attorney general, improving the lives of thousands of Kentuckians in every corner of our Commonwealth. I'm confident he will continue serving as a strong voice fighting for Kentucky's families and our values. If Matt Bevin decides to act on the dangerous proposals he has outlined during his campaign that hurt our hardworking families, Kentucky Democrats will continue to oppose him using every tool we have at every turn. Well, but they won't use every tool they have, to find out if Matt Bevin, the Republican, actually won or not. That, to me, seems crazy. But that's where Democrats are. They just don't seem, they have never understood, it seems, how these systems work, how these electoral systems work, until they get screwed by them. But even in this case, where they may have gotten screwed by them, they don't seem to care. According to Roll Call, if you ask Democrats in Washington, the blame for the Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway's stunning loss Tuesday night, according to Roll Call, falls on the unpopularity of political insiders during a year in which Donald Trump and Ben Carson are leading Republican primary polls. Elizabeth Pearson, the executive director for the Democratic Governors Association, said about Jack Conway, unfortunately, he ran into unexpected headwinds of Trump mania, losing to an outsider candidate in the year of the outsider. Now, where does she get that information? No idea. No evidence whatsoever. Now, the Democratic Governors Association spent some $5 million in Jack Conway's favor. And then they put out a statement saying, well, it was Trump. Incredibly, Trump was delighted about it. He said, I love what happened in Kentucky. He's a good guy. They gave me a lot of credit for that one. He said, I don't deserve the credit, but there is something happening, folks. So not only did the Democrats, in this case, the Democratic Governors Association, do nothing to question the results, and never mind questioning, they've done nothing to verify the results. But they actually made a campaign commercial for Donald Trump in the bargain. It's amazing to me. I mean, it's just, you know, do they want to lose? Maybe so. And then you look at, the pundits. The pundits, they all, I mentioned this with Caroli yesterday. They all liked, with Carol Lee. Did I say Caroli? I meant Carol Lee yesterday on the show. The pundits always like to reverse engineer what happened in the polls. They, when they get results on election day that are totally unverified, they completely believe them. Never mind that I think there was four or five or six pre-election polls by independent analysts, big ones, good ones, important ones, with, you know, transparent methodology, completely independently coming up with the same result that Jack Conway was going to win by about 5 points. Never mind that. The polls come in. I'm sorry, the results come in totally unverified by computers that fail, by computers that can be hacked. And the pundits go out and say, well, those results, obviously, those are correct. And here's why. And then they go and they reverse engineer reasons for it. Now, writing over again at Roll Call, Nathan Gonzalez says, of the six public polls since the end of September, five of them showed Conway in the lead with margins between 2 and 5 points, including a survey from Bevin's own campaign in the middle of October. He's the Republican. A sixth poll, an automated survey by the Republican firm Vox Populi near the end of the month, showed Conway and Bevin tied. That was the last public poll in the race. Private polls did not hint at the 9-point margin either. In the face of a clear, albeit narrow, trend line toward Conway, we moved, talking about Roll Call, moved the race from a pure toss-up to a tilts Democratic in the middle of the month. But we also wrote that Bevin would need the vast majority of undecideds in those polls to swing in his direction in spite of his negative image. And Bevin had a very negative image. Gonzalez goes on to write, that looks like almost exactly what happened, that the undecideds all went for Bevin. How does Gonzalez know that? He doesn't. He doesn't. He's just reverse engineering. There were no exit polls done in Kentucky. Some people had asked about that. There were none done. So they're just making up the reasons why this happened. Clearly, they weren't undecided, said one Kentucky Democratic strategist. They had made up their minds. They weren't. They just weren't telling pollsters. That's what he comes up with. So let's see. One GOP strategist thought that Dale Curtis, he was the independent running in the race, that he would need to be at 2 or 3% or less in order for the Republican to win narrowly. Curtis, however, received nearly 4 points, and Bevin still won by nearly 9 points. Again, a landslide. And Bevin is the second Republican to win a governor's race in Kentucky in 40 years. As Daniel Donner of Daily Coast Elections pointed out, Conway's 44% is the worst showing by a Democratic governor in Kentucky since 1863. Yes, when Abraham Lincoln was president. And then Gonzalez goes on to say he won, Bevin won, despite being a flawed candidate, despite the fact that the Democrats outspent the Republicans. Conway outspent Bevin 6.6 million to 1.7 million on television, yet Bevin still won. 6.6 million spent by the Democrats, not even two by the Republicans, and the Republicans still won. As a matter of fact, the Republicans had pulled their funding from Bevin in midsummer because he was such a terrible candidate and said so many stupid things. And then the Democrats now say, oh, well, it must be the unexpected headwinds of Trump mania. It's just amazing. They just reverse engineer. Here's an idea. Count the ballots. That's all I'm saying. Count the ballots. Maybe they're right. Find out. I think the electorate deserves that much. Oh, you'll hear people say turnout was so low, and that's why Democrats lose when they don't. Well, turnout was lower in 2011 when the Democrats won. This was actually higher, the turnout, than one of the Democratic strategists had predicted. They thought it would be close to 800,000. It was actually 982,000, almost a million. So if you're looking for places to make public records requests and figure out what's going on, we gave you a couple of hints last night that roll call also seems to note. Jack Conway, the Democrat, underperformed in two key urban areas, according to the reported results. He won in Fayette County, that's Lexington, by 15 points. But the Democratic Secretary of State on the same ballot, she won it by 23 points. Did they shave some votes off in Fayette County from Jack Conway? Be nice to find out. Public records request, please. Jack Conway also won in Jefferson County by 19 points. That's where Louisville is. But, again, the Secretary of State, Democratic, Allison Lundergan Grimes, she won Jefferson County by 26 points. Great way to steal elections, by the way, is to steal them in areas where you don't think to look. You think they're going to, you know, boost the results in a Republican area. No, just decrease them in a Democratic area. Just saying. All right. I'm running late. I got to get out. Food for thought. We'll continue to follow it here on the Bradcast. Quick break, and we're back with David Roberts. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast.
Science is real. From the Big Bang to DNA. Science is real. From evolution to the Milky Way. I like those stories about angels, unicorns, and elves. Now I like those stories as much as anybody else.
Me too.
But when I'm seeking knowledge, either simple or abstract, the factor is science. The factor is science.
Science is real.
Yeah, science is real.
Science is real.
Don't tell Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives, though. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from Brad Blog.
Science is real.
Com. A quick break from electoral politics to from dumb Democrats in electoral politics to dumb Republicans in U.S. House of Representatives politics, I guess. Man. All right. A week or so ago, the Republicans Benghazi Select Committee hearings in the U.S. House came crashing down as Hillary Clinton stood up to some 11 hours of withering questioning in open testimony before the GOP-led special committee. This was the eighth one to look into the imaginary Benghazi scandal. And like those before it, it failed to find any criminal wrongdoing. Actually, any wrongdoing at all, really. So with that dead end, the GOP immediately began or continued looking for something, anything that they could try to use to tar Democrats and the Obama administration with in the U.S. House. Because, you know, that's what they do. Somehow, something, anything. There's got to be a real scandal somewhere. And by the way, I'm sure there is, but Republicans have yet to find anything close, at least anything that they are actually willing to take action on. I mean, there's plenty if you wanted to actually go up against this administration, but they don't. They just want to politically posture and so forth if it helps them in an election. That's all it is. In any event, just a day or so after the Benghazi committee disaster, the U.S. House Oversight Committee thought they had something, with the Department of Justice coming out just a day or so before, as we told you they would long ago, finding no criminal wrongdoing in another pretend Republican scandal, the IRS scandal from a few years back. With that one looking pretty dim, Jason Chaffetz, congressman who now heads the House Oversight Committee, decided it was time to bring impeachment proceedings. Yes, impeachment proceedings. But not against the President of the United States, not against Hillary Clinton. This one, this target, would be the head of the IRS, John Koskinen, or John Koskinen. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. He is that insignificant. Now, never mind that he had nothing to do with the pretend scandal that the GOP believes occurred in the IRS, where they believe that Obama and his cronies were targeting conservative organizations for political reasons when they were applying for nonprofit status. Never mind that. The GOP needed someone, anyone, somebody to fulfill their impeachment fever dreams. And John Koskinen, or John Koskinenin, I don't know, the chair of the IRS, who was appointed after the so-called IRS scandal, by the way, as I recall, he would do the trick. But that move apparently is so transparent that even Fox News's favorite ghoulish wingnut pundit, Charles Krauthammer, came out that night to say that the idea is ridiculous and won't work out well for the Republicans.
Look, this is not going to end well. Republicans have demonstrated, if they ever demonstrated anything, Republicans in the Congress have shown that they have no ability to conduct successful investigations of this administration. Everything they have touched has failed or backfired.
Now, if you can't even get Charles Krauthammer, Fox News, to go along with your pretend scandals, you are really lost. But hope is not lost. Quietly, with little fanfare, at least, the U.S. House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology has been moving ahead with actually a number of outrageous investigations of publicly funded scientists. Writing at Vox.com recently, David Roberts wrote an article headlined, "The House Science Committee is worse than the Benghazi Committee." Worse than Benghazi? Really? David Roberts is a longtime writer at grist.org. He's now at Vox.com, where he focuses on politics, climate, and energy. He has contributed to or been featured in the New York Times, Boston Globe, Huffington Post, Outside Magazine, Wired, and everywhere else. And, of course, most famously here on the broadcast. He returns today to the broadcast to discuss how the Science Committee is worse than the Benghazi Committee. David Roberts, welcome back, sir.
Hey, Brad.
Glad to have you here. All right. All right, I'll bite, and you break this down for us very nicely, so we can go through each of these pieces of your argument why this committee, the Science Committee, is now worse than this special select committee on Benghazi. But one of the points you make is that of these sort of three sections is that right now the ranking member of the Science Committee, Congressman Lamar Smith, is issuing subpoenas left and right without consulting the Democratic ranking member of that committee. Is that a new thing? Have Republicans given themselves permission to do that? Because I don't remember that happening in the past.
Yeah, it didn't get a lot of press, but it happened in January. I mean, some committee chairs, like Daryl Issa, for instance, Issa,
Koskinen, you know, Koskinen, who knows?
Yeah, I know. We really should have studied up before this. ISA has had this power to sort of unilaterally issue subpoenas as part of the Oversight Committee for a long time, and we've seen what he's done with it, you know, the Fast and Furious investigation and the IRS investigation, all those basic farces.
But Acorn.
Yeah. Oh, yes, Acorn. And what happened in January is the House GOP leadership voted to give those same powers to the chairs of several other committees, including the House Science Committee. So whereas before, a committee chair could not issue a subpoena, which is theoretically supposed to be a pretty big deal, could not issue a subpoena without the ranking member signing off on it. And this was meant to prevent, you know, investigations from being used as purely partisan tools. Mm-hmm. But of course, House GOP leadership very much wanted to use investigations as purely partisan tools, so they changed that rule. And in almost two years he's run the Science Committee, Lamar Smith has issued more subpoenas than all previous chairs of the committee going back some 50 some years cumulatively ever issued. So yeah, he's newly empowered and he's going nuts with it.
That was Congresswoman Eddie. Is it Eddie or Edie? We ought to check these things first. Do you know Eddie Bernice Johnson is her name? We'll just call her Congresswoman Johnson. She's ranking member of the Science Committee. Yeah, she had written a scathing letter that you highlighted to Lamar Smith. Citing that in just 2 years and 10 months, he has presided as chair of the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He's issued six subpoenas, and that is more than the prior 54-year history of the committee. Now, generally, when Congress wants something, when Congress wants testimony or documents, they can ask the person or the organization to submit the documents, and if they then refuse, then you get into the subpoena process. But it seems like Lamar Smith is just almost willy-nilly just going out and making these subpoena requests of these scientists and these scientific organizations.
Well, that's a good point that Johnson made, which is that it's not like the House Science Committee has never investigated matters of importance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that generally when an investigative committee in the House of Representatives contacts you and wants you to testify or turn over documents, you do. Like, most people cooperate.
Sure.
They've investigated some extremely sensitive and important subjects without ever having the need to issue subpoenas. So this is, it's not like he's doing more intensive investigations. It's just that he's using these subpoenas as a tool of harassment. So a great example to look at is this most recent adventure he's on. So the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, which we can call NOAA from now on, hopefully.
Yes, we can.
The guys at NOAA, you know, just did a new study, and it looked at temperature data, and it looked at the adjustments that are made to temperature data to make it all uniform and to make it tractable. And these are adjustments that are utterly routine in any large data set. You know, you have this large sort of diverse data set of different kinds of temperature measurements from different places, and you have to adjust them to make them all fit into the same spreadsheet so you can look at the trends among them. Anyway, this has been going on at NOAA forever and in climate science forever. But what's happened is the NOAA guys just came out with a study saying that when the surface temperature data is adjusted correctly, the so-called global warming pause, the sort of hiatus in global warming that has been the cri de coeur of the climate skeptics in these last few years kind of disappears. If you adjust the data properly, it turns out there was no pause. So this pause is extremely beloved of the climate skeptic community, which we should pause here and note includes the chair of the House Science Committee, does not buy mainstream climate science, including most of the Republicans on the science committee,
so
do not buy the science of climate change.
Well, let me just clarify, David Roberts. So this is about, and this was a paper, this is the one by Thomas Carl, right? With the most boring title ever, Possible Artifacts of Data Biases in the Recent Global Surface Warming Hiatus. So basically, NOAA went out and said, okay, well, some of these thermometers, you know, they're tracking the temperatures at night. Others are doing them at the during the day. Let's normalize everything so everything makes sense so we can accurately track what's going on. And when they do that, they find that, oh, there is no pause, that the Earth continues to warm. Even though the deniers, like Lamar Smith, who heads the science committee, he's a climate science denier, he says, oh, no, it hasn't been warming for the past 10 years. They still think that, right?
Well, this is, I mean, there's two perspectives to look at this. From a scientific perspective, from the perspective of climate science, the pause was always nonsense. Like any 10 or 15-year period, in a multi-hundred-year period of warming, is just statistical noise.
Right.
You know, so scientifically, the pause was always BS, and this data adjustment that they're doing with this paper in a normal environment would be utterly boring and unnotable science. Mm-hmm. It's just normal working science. The problem is that from a political perspective, the pause was very valuable to these Republicans, but here's what happened, and here's the key part of this story, which I think is really goes to show what's going on, is that these data adjustments that scientists do to make their data uniform and tractable and workable have always been an object of great suspicion among the climate skeptic blogger community. There's always these dark conspiracy theories floating around the skepticosphere about how NOAA is deliberately massaging the data to make it look like there's warming.
Right.
And it's no coincidence that this new paper came out, and then this climate skeptic blog comes out with these new accusations of data manipulation. And then Lamar Smith makes the exact same accusations towards the NOAA scientists. That you know, what you see when you look into this is that the right-wing bloggers and the right-wing media and the right-wing operators are now all of a piece with the right-wing science committee. They're all on the same team working the same basic effort, which is to discredit NOAA. So now Smith is making these accusations, which, again, like, our politics are so crazy these days that it's hard to register anything as particularly extreme or outrageous, because it's just a flood of extreme outrageous stuff happening all the time. But honestly, like, the head of a science committee accusing the head of a government scientific research body of deliberately falsifying data in order to support a political effort to pass climate policy is really a serious accusation. It shouldn't just be something that, like, you know, it shouldn't just be part of the daily noise of politics. That's a serious deal. And so Smith wrote the NOAA people repeatedly saying, you know, we have these suspicions about your data. We want to see all the data and the methodology.
Fair enough. And by the way, if there is a concern, legitimate or otherwise, if there's a concern, it's fair enough for him to reach out as head of that committee and say, what happened here? Let show us the papers, explain why these numbers changed and this adjustment happened.
Sure. And the NOAA people wrote him back and helpfully pointed out, dear sir, all our data and methodology is already public. It's on a website. Here's the URL. You are welcome to go look at it as closely as you want to. You're welcome to rerun the numbers. Like, we could not be, the whole thing could not be more transparent. NOAA puts all its data and all its methodology on its website so that there's nothing, you know. So what happened was, the House Science Committee wrote the NOAA guys three separate times demanding this data, and the NOAA guys and the NOAA people and the House Democrats on the committee kept responding, saying, it's public. You don't, there's nothing to turn over. It's on the damn website. And so Smith, finally having gotten all the data and methodology involved in the study, decided that that wasn't enough. What he wants is the internal communications among NOAA scientists, all of them, going back several years, that might have anything to do with temperature measurement, which, of course, is an enormous amount of science, an enormous amount of NOAA's work. And he gives NOAA 2 weeks to round up all relevant internal communications relating to temperature science, to temperature measurement, that he wants it turned over in 2 weeks. And so NOAA responds, and Representative Johnson responded in her letter saying, the data and methodology are public. What conceivable need is there for you to see the confidential communications among NOAA scientists? You know, what need is there for this? Lamar Smith, let's be clear, has not articulated a need in all this. It's been going on for weeks, months. At no point has he said, here's why I need to see it. There's no justification. He's just, at this point, literally just hounding NOAA. And now NOAA's pushing back.
They were given 2 weeks to comply. I'm looking at the subpoena here. All documents and communications related to NOAA's measurement of our climate going back nearly 7 years of internal deliberations and communications among scientists at NOAA. So we're talking about all of their email back and forth, all of their notes, all of that stuff going back 2 weeks to give 7 years of material for a scandal, a concern, a problem that they have not even yet been able to identify. What is the problem, the scandal, or the concern?
And let's be real. Everybody knows why they want it. They can't articulate a public purpose for it because there's no purpose that they want to share with the public, but everybody knows why they want it. They want to do the same thing. Do you remember ClimateGate, silly scandal about climate scientists from a few years ago? They want to do the same thing that got that whole scandal started, which is sift through these emails, look for bits and pieces that, if you yank them out of context, look suspicious, and selectively leak those emails to reporters who, history shows, will credulously eat it up and publish stories saying, you know, scientists says he's going to massage the data, you know, and then if you look into it enough, you're like, oh, in context, this is just normal science.
Not just right-wing media, who you would expect that from Fox News, Daily Caller, and so forth, but the mainstream media, they will take those tips. When they're told, hey, here's a tip, this email we found says this, they won't ask for the rest of the context. They'll just run with it. That's what ABC News' Jonathan Carl did on some of those Benghazi emails that turned out to be faked, just tipped. They fall for it.
This is what, for all the sort of incompetence and haplessness of the current GOP right now, one thing they're really good at is they figured out how the media ecosystem works, and they know if they have these little faux scandals, these little fake mini-scandals, they offer them to reporters, and what will happen is somebody at Breitbart will take it, or somebody at Daily Caller will take it, and then Fox will take it, and then all of a sudden it's something people are talking about. And so, of course, mainstream reporters will like, well, it might be BS, but people are talking about it, so now I have to cover it too.
Right.
And so, you know, it goes on and on, and then, like, by the time it's determined, oh, look, there's nothing There's no creamy center of right. this nougat. There's nothing in here that won't be a big headline. There will be no main. Right. There will be no headline saying faux scandal turns out to be, you know, BS.
Oh, and people still believe. People still believe that this, you know, the scientists were fixing the data or whatever that was in that stolen climate gate. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very similar, I mean, it was exactly the similar thing. They were making adjustments to the data like data scientists do all the time. It's just that if you talk about massaging or adjusting the data and you yank that completely out of context and put a bunch of dark insinuation around it, you can make it sound bad, and that's why they want these guys to stop.
Adjusting data. I want to get to these other two real quick because I want to underscore it's not just this one issue. Lamar Smith is doing this all over the place. So there has been political pressure of late on Exxon and on the oil, big oil in general, concerning what they knew about climate change, about global warming, going back to the 70s. We had Congressman Ted Lieu on the broadcast a week or so ago. Yeah. He's asking for a DOJ investigation. Bernie Sanders now is, Hillary Clinton now is, comparing what Big Oil did to what Big Tobacco did in obscuring their own science about climate change in this case. So now 20 scientists have sent a letter to Obama and to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch asking for them to look at a potential RICO case against Big Oil. David Roberts, what happened next? What did Lamar Smith do from there?
Yeah, so just to be clear, the scientists who wrote did not say the oil companies have broken the law. They did not say people who don't believe in climate science should be prosecuted,
right.
Which is, of course, how it's being spun in the right-wing media. They just said that it's clear now that they knew one thing and said a different thing for many years. We urge you to look into it, investigate it, basically, is what it said.
Right.
So they didn't like this at all. They don't like this pressure that's building. So what they did is one of the scientists who signed the letter runs this nonprofit science institute called the Institute of Global Environment and Society. He's the director of this place. Mm-hmm. His name is Shukla.
Yeah, Jagadish Shukla. We'll go with that.
Yes, you need to post a pronunciation guide after this
for this interview. I know you're right.
Anyway, he signed it, and so it turns out that the Institute of Global Environment and Society is taxpayer funded, basically mm-hmm. nonprofit. Taxpayer funded, and what happened is the letter that the scientists sent to the president was inadvertently posted on the website of the Institute of Global Environment and Society mm-hmm. briefly, and then taken down. So the people at the institute say that it was just a mistake, an
right.
accident, but that was enough to spark this sort of accusation that what's happening is that taxpayer dollars are being used to fund this ideological, quest to prosecute climate deniers, basically like politics.
He called it, Lamar Smith said that this was partisan political activity. By requesting a RICO investigation of companies and organizations that disagree with the Obama administration on climate change.
Right. Just an honest disagreement. Who could object? You know, so A, that distorts what the oil companies are being accused of. Mm-hmm. B, why should it be partisan? But C, and most, this is the essence of the cases, Shukla, like all the other scientists, is a private citizen of the United States and thus has a right to express his political opinions and wrote and signed on to that letter. He listed his affiliation, mm-hmm. but all those scientists are participating in this letter as private citizens. It's not like the Institute for the Global Environment and Society officially, as an organization, endorsed this letter or in any way, they have nothing to do with it. But anyway, so...
So are they doing the same thing? Are they trying to get his email and his internal documents at George Mason University and all of that
yes,
nonsense?
But, But it gets even better. Not only do they want basically all email, electronic documents, and data that can be reasonably anticipated to be subject to a request for production by the committee. So in other words, please round up everything you think we might someday want, you know. But not only that, but it says, exercise reasonable efforts to identify and notify current employees, former employees, contractors, and third-party groups who may have access to such electronic records that they are to be preserved. So basically, not only do we want all your internal communications from your institute's entire six-year history,
right,
but we want you to let people, let scientists know who have ever participated in this institute, who have ever been a part of it, that they might be a target too. You know, it could not be a more clear sort of like, you know,
this.
Basically, they're trying to ruin this institute.
This,
like, what are you going to do if you get a letter from this institute saying, by virtue of your participation in our scientific work, you're now the subject of a congressional investigation? You know?
Yeah, this is just, it's amazing to me. And you give a third example that we won't have time to go into. I'll encourage people to go check out your piece over at Vox.com. Headline, House Science Committee is Worse Than the Benghazi Committee. But basically, they're also going after the National Science Foundation itself, this august body, concerning various scientific, really dumb, not dumb, but reports with names that they think are dumb, the titles of studies that they think are inappropriate or something. They're now harassing them as well and sharing whatever concerns they have with Fox News, leaking it to Fox News, that same media ecosystem thing they're trying to do.
The important thing there is that the National Science Foundation has a very long established practice of assessing these grants, and it crucially involves the anonymity of the peer reviewers. That's like the key to the process. And now Smith is demanding that the National Science Foundation turn over all the names and internal communications of these anonymous reviewers. And again, like, what do you think what message is that going to send the scientific community? You cannot participate in or sign off on or research or even peer review controversial topics without the danger of a congressional committee coming after you.
Now, they're trying to clearly, as you point out, David Roberts, you know, find something that they can take out of context and share it to make it represent something other than it does and embarrass these scientists and so forth. But what is really going on here? I mean, why are they doing this in the first place? Is this meant to have a chilling effect on science itself and scientists? And what are they getting at? What is the ultimate point of what they're trying to do here?
Well, you have to start, I realize it's difficult, but you have to kind of put yourself in the headspace of a modern Tea Party Republican like Lamar Smith. Mm-hmm. So they've convinced themselves that the entire American scientific community has basically been overrun by leftists now, and so they're engaged in politically directed research, and they're massaging results to get politically welcome results. This is how they deal with climate change. This is the only way they know how to deal with climate change. They can't grapple with the reality, so they need some political explanation for why Democrats, you know, for why science is supporting this. And that's their story, is that science has essentially the core scientific institutions of the U.S., have been corrupted by liberals. Now, if you start from that perspective, then everything they're doing makes sense. They want to expose this leftist conspiracy. They want to expose these political motivations. And if you are convinced beyond doubt that those motivations exist, then it really doesn't matter. Then you're doing God's work. Even if you're, like, digging through people's private emails and taking things out of context, even if, like, that might not be fair, you're still doing it for good reasons, right? You're exposing giant conspiracy. So, that's how they think of themselves, I think.
So this attack on science overall all comes back to climate change science, which then all comes back to the fossil fuel industries, which these guys support. So if they can discredit science and scientists overall, that will give them the ammunition they need to say, therefore you can't trust science and scientists, therefore everything you're hearing about global warming is nonsense, therefore keep burning all the fossil fuel you want, everything is fine. I mean, is that really where all of this emanates from?
I think it lines up well with fossil fuel company interests, but I don't think these guys view themselves as doing that. I think they've really convinced themselves that academia and science and media, you know, mm-hmm. and culture, really, generally, have been taken over by America-hating leftists. And they, you know, I think they really mean it, which to me is way scarier of a story than the idea that they're just doing it as, like, a favor for the fossil fuel industry. Mm. The fact that they really believe it is creepier to
and,
me. I don't know.
And
your mileage would be very...
Well, yeah, and they are, you know, you say it's worse than Benghazi, and I would agree with you there. I might also go as far as to say I think it's worse in many respects than... Well, then the McCarthy investigations, because at least those were in the spotlight to some extent. I mean, this is sort of going on. Nobody pays it other than David Roberts and Vox.com and nerds like me and Desi Doyen here. Nobody pays attention to the way an incredibly powerful House committee is going after scientists and their livelihood.
And when you go after political operators like Hillary Clinton, like the Benghazi committee is doing, it might be unfair, but she at least has the power and the resources and the wherewithal to defend herself. She knows it's all a big political game, and she's equipped to play it. But these individual scientists, they don't know anything about politics. They don't know how to play this game. They don't have money for lawyers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so this is going to... The damage that this threatens to do to the open mm-hmm. practice of science in the U.S., I think, is worse than the mm-hmm. danger posed by these more sort of high-profile political committees, because once you damage science, for instance, the National Science Foundation has been around for 60 years and has built up this incredible body of trust among the scientific community that its review process has integrity and is high quality and is anonymous. And once you crap on that trust, it's very, very difficult to build it back up. It takes a long time. So the damage that they're doing to the practice of science in the U.S., I think, is much deeper and more disturbing than whatever the ebb and flow of who's up and down in electoral politics.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know you've talked to Dr. Michael E. Mann about this. He has been relentlessly attacked. We've had him on the show many times. He, you know, made popular the famous hockey stick graph. He has been attacked. He has had his emails, subpoenaed in court cases. He has been called all manner of, you know, compared to child molesters, literally, and he has had to defend himself and, spend all kinds of money. And he's just one scientist. Most of these guys cannot do that, cannot afford to do that, don't have the guts to do that, perhaps.
They really don't want to. They want to do science.
Right.
That's not why they got into this. They don't want, Michael Mann, bless his heart, has become a political warrior by necessity, but most of the people doing science don't want anything to do with that. They just want to putter away with their spreadsheets. They didn't sign up for this.
It's unbelievable. It really is, and disgusting and appalling. And thank you for calling it out, David Roberts. I wish more in the media would. I think eventually they will, but... You know, how many people get trampled? How many good scientists get trampled in the meantime? Check out David Roberts' story over at Vox.com and all of his work over there. This one is called The House Science Committee is Worse Than the Benghazi Committee, and he makes one hell of a case. David, always great talking with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Have a good one.
You bet. You too. Okay, late as usual, so we're taking a quick break, and we will be back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. She did. She blinded me with science. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Because Desi Doyen blinded me with so much science in that last segment, we have no time for the Green News Report. We're running late.
There's just too much science to fit in all of
you
this show.
You didn't blind me. I'm trying to blame you for it, but it's my fault. I ran long. So,
We have 10 pounds of show in a one-pound bag.
There you go. We will run today's Green News Report in our next thrilling episode. But that's okay because we've got a minute or so here with some breaking news that you have.
Yes. The New York Attorney General has begun what the New York Times reports is a, quote, sweeping investigation into ExxonMobil to determine whether the company lied to the public about the risks of climate change or, more importantly, I think, to investors about how those risks could hurt the oil business. And this is according to people with knowledge of the investigation. It's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman of New York. He issued a subpoena Wednesday evening to ExxonMobil. He's demanding extensive financial records, emails, and other documents. And the focus, there's this thing called the Martin Act in New York, and that is what allows the Attorney General to have broad powers to investigate financial crimes.
Boom, boom, boom. So this is what we've been talking about. ExxonMobil having investigated and learned about climate change, global warming back in the 70s, as we now know, thanks to Inside Climate Science for their report.
Right.
That we talked about on this show many times. Los Angeles Times did an independent report, and they both find that Exxon knew back in the 70s and 80s about climate change and then went about spending millions of dollars to obscure their own science just the way Big Tobacco did when it came to the dangers of their product. And now, with Eric Schneiderman on this in New York and all of these people calling for an investigation, we had Congressman Ted Lieu on the show. He had written to the Attorney General's office. So now we got a state AG looking at it from a financial angle, because why? This actually affects investors.
If the
company knew.
If the company knows of external circumstances that will affect the profits that go to shareholders, then shareholders are supposed to be informed of that by law.
Exxon is in big, big trouble. ExxonMobil, I think, is in big, big trouble, whether it's this, the AG in New York now, Eric Schneiderman, and the, what is it, a subpoena for documents?
Yes, a subpoena for documents.
Or the AG, the Department of Justice. Well, we'll see. Well, actually, they should be in big, big trouble. But given our system of justice in this country, that remains to be seen, especially when you're dealing with the most powerful industry, the most powerful company in the most powerful industry on the planet ever in human civilization. We'll see if they can take them down. But very interesting development. Thank you for that. We'll make up for it in our next show with today's Green News Report. Until then, Desi Doyen, my thanks to you, our producer, and to Cynthia Cohn, our booking goddess, and to my guest today, David Roberts of Vox.com, and of course to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. Greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can always download it at bradblog.com or over at iTunes, where we hope you'll put in a good word for us and make it easier for everyone else to find us as well. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks at The Brad Blog, Facebooks or Twitters at The Brad Blog. Drop us email, bradcast@bradblog.com. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.